Welcome to the Rad Season Podcast. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had an episode and I'm stoked to be back. I've recently just started a new gig with the insanely epic water brand out of the US, Liquid Death. I'm going to be looking after their lifestyle marketing for the UK and Europe. So I've been running around in London, been over to see all the gang in California. And yeah, it's been a bit of a wild ride the last couple of weeks. But we're back with the next episode. And this week, I'm stoked to be joined by skateboarder, BBC radio presenter, podcaster, and host of the football platform 433, James Threlfall. James comes from just outside Bath and radiates more charm than a pack of cheeky monkeys, with a career predominantly in radio for the BBC and as a host for football platform 433. James is a human ball of energy, ready to make you laugh, gasp, and cheer like a madman. We're going to be chatting about how he got into skateboarding, becoming a presenter, having a show on the BBC, hosting the Ultimate Party podcast, his favourite events and festivals, including NAS, Simple Sessions, and loads more. Let's jump into it. Hey, James. How are you, man?
Hey, man, I'm really good. Thank you so much for having me on. I've seen a bunch of these previously. And when you dipped into my inbox and were like, do you want to come? I was like, mate, of course, 100%, let's do it. So now, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been busy times, right? You've been all over the place recently.
Yeah, it's usually pretty busy, but like this has felt really busy this past month. I mean, like one of them was kind of like it was a bit of work, also a bit of skating out in LA, but then snow bombing, also kind of a bit of work getting to snowboard as well, which was sick. And then straight back in with national championships for Skateboard GB, hosting and commentating that. And then later this week, at the time of recording, out to do Champions League stuff. We've kind of got the final run of Champions League stuff with 433, so there's a bunch of trips in there, and then fitting in all the usual BBC stuff alongside as well, the radio stuff. So yeah, it's busy, man, but I'd kind of feel weird if it wasn't. Like I don't really like sitting around twiddling my thumbs, you know, so yeah, it kind of worked.
Has it kind of been like that for a while with different projects on and stuff, would you say? Like,
man, kind of, yeah, in the sense like I'm real bad for feeling guilty if I am just sat around doing nothing. So I'm all like, dude, I'm really bad with, I work on weekends and then I don't go, oh, I need to take the Monday off. Like, I'm like, no, if I take the Monday off, I will sit and guilt trip myself being like, dude, it's a Monday, you should be working. But it's like, yeah, I was working till 10 o'clock on Saturday night. But like, you know, it's maybe not the best trait, but also, yeah, I do just kind of just keep myself busy like that, man.
And how is Meyerhofen? Got to ask you about that. I've never actually been to snowboarding. I've been wanting to. It's been like on my radar for a while.
Yeah, it was my first time out there, and it was genuinely wicked, like so cool. It's a really nice little town, actually. Like I didn't really know what to expect. I hadn't really looked into it too much. But yeah, going out there, snow bombing obviously transforms the place, but the locals are so cool. Like they all kind of fully embrace the festival, because there's always a bit of like, oh, is it going to be like, oh, the Brits are coming in again for snow bombing? Like wasn't like that at all. Like the locals totally love it. They get involved in the parties. So like everyone's kind of meeting each other. You've got like Brits meeting the Austrians, and then they're kind of just giving up their venues for it and stuff, and having parties. Like there's kind of legendary thing where there's a butcher there who's like, again, bit of a legend basically. His name's Hans the Butcher, and that's kind of like, yeah, the name of their butcher shop. And they have pop-up sets throughout the week. So Groove Armada just did a surprise set whilst we were there in the butcher's shop. And like, yeah, they just kind of start pulling people out. Snowbombing put a notification out on their phone. And then in the butcher's, just Groove Armada pops up and just plays a massive set. So they do stuff like that all the time, man. But everywhere you go throughout snowbombing, like you go up the mountain, you get to any like chairlift. So it feels like there's a party everywhere. So it's really cool, man. You can kind of just walk around and just enjoy what's going on around you. So yeah, and then staying down in Meyerhofen as well, man, the views just round there are insane. It's so such a nice place to be. Like, bro, I'm hoping the first of many times I'm going to get out there, to be honest. It was really, really sick.
Nice. And were you over there for work or?
Yeah, so we were shooting. I mean, yeah, we were shooting for Snowbombing. So we were out filming stuff and kind of just, we do a lot of festival stuff where we get stuck in with the crowd. And yeah, that's kind of what I've kind of built up through like my work with NAS and Boardmasters Festival, like just getting mics in people's faces. Like the festival energy is always second to none. Like you put a mic in front of someone at a festival and you are 9 times out of 10 going to get absolute gold from them. Cause like everyone's just in a great mood. Everyone's in great spirits. We kind of thought we'd replicate that Snowbombing and yeah, the people delivered. But it did mean we kind of, because we were out filming at particular points, we could get up the mountain, get out on the boards and stuff. So it was myself and Dan, who I film a lot with. And then we were kind of hanging with Billy Morgan a lot. So Billy Morgan was giving me a bit of a crash course in how to ride rails and stuff. It was honestly a wicked, wicked week. Yeah.
And how was the My First Words? Because you were doing stuff with Tim and Gendel as well, right?
Yeah, Tim and Gendel. Man, that show is mad. Have you been to one before?
I've never been, though. I'm going to be chatting with Tim soon. He's going to be coming on the show.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man, Tim is the best. You know, actually, Tim is someone that I have kind of, like, you know, when you felt like you've met someone loads of times because you're in the same circles and you've spoken on socials and everything. Actually, Snowbombing was the first time that me and Tim have met. And actually the first time I've met Gendel as well. And like, yeah, it felt like we'd known each other for ages because literally like we'd been on Insta DMs and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, it was really cool to actually just kind of get to hang out with them and get to meet them. And then, yeah, that Tim just hit me up and was like, mate, do you want to come and judge one of them? And it was wild. Like the show that they put on, I'm sure they won't mind me saying, like the start of the show, it not like it was hard work, but like the crowd weren't quite there yet. And what Tim and Gendel do to get the crowd fired up, by then we have people like just climbing on stage that were like, what are you doing? Like, get off the stage. But it's like, man, the energy that they can turn a room of people that are just sat having a beer into an absolute party. And I love it. It was wicked to judge it, but also wicked to see in person kind of what they do, because they are great at what they do. And just to hang out and be part of it was like a bit of an honor, man. It was really cool.
It's interesting how that can change and how they can like win the crowd over, right? And just get everyone hyped up. And
yeah. I'd love to know if that's daunting for them or not. When they go in and they go, oh man, is this crowd gonna turn? Are they gonna come with us on this one? Or are they just gonna stare at us blankly? Because the first couple of songs, man, like people, for anyone that doesn't know, basically the premise is that they will play a song, they'll play an intro of a song. And if you think that you can nail the first line of the song, they're like really big tunes. If you think you can absolutely nail it, you whack your hand up, fastest hand up gets up on stage and basically does the first words of a song. And then they always go to the chorus and everyone has like a big old party and stuff. But some of the first songs, like they were massive tunes. I can't remember what they were, but like no one was putting their hands up. And in the end, we started to get a couple and then bam, by the end, man, it's just like everyone is, yeah, I want to get in. It's amazing. It's honestly such a great thing to be a part of.
And it kind of reminds me of like stand-up comedy or something like that. And have you found that anywhere where, like when you're kind of going around say NAS or kind of doing that audience,
yeah,
but putting mics in front of people's faces, are you getting like, is it mixed vibes with some of the people, or is everyone just there because they want to have a good time? And
sometimes, man, like you get a real mixture, especially in a crowd like, and I kind of love that, man. Like when you've got a crowd like that and people are on obviously different levels, like some people have had a drink, some people haven't, like it's a really interesting kind of dynamic. Some people absolutely want to be on camera, some people don't, which is absolutely fine, of course. But like some people want to be on camera to the point they will run up, grab your microphone and just start screaming. Mate, the amount of times we have people come up at a festival and start freestyling is unbelievable. Like take the mic and start spitting bars. I don't know if they've ever rapped in their life, but like it just seems to be a thing that we get at a lot of festivals. But also we have one at Boardmasters where we went and spoke to someone who was absolutely lovely. But her husband started on me. He was like, what are you talking? Yeah, he hadn't heard the conversation.
What are you talking about, missus? Was it like that?
Literally. I think he'd had a couple of drinks and we just had to defuse the situation. We were just like, dude, we're just here filming. Like, honestly, I'm not hitting on your wife. It's fine. But like, yeah. So it's really funny. You never know what you're going to get, but festivals always deliver. 100%. You're always going to get some really fun stuff.
And man, how did you get into skating? When because you grew up just outside Bath, right? And what was kind of the beginning of that?
Tony Hawk, man, the Tony Hawk games. Like, that was literally it. My brother had a PlayStation 1, bought the first Tony Hawk skate. And like, I'd never really seen skateboarding, I don't think. Like, my brother had this like Sonic the Hedgehog complete in the garage. That was probably all I'd seen of skateboarding. He brought home Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, and I just got stuck in. Like, and yeah, I don't know. It was kind of weird. Like, I don't know why I became like super kind of into it and like obsessed with it, but I just kind of loved that game. And I think we only had like a few PlayStation games as well. I think we had like Crash Bandicoot, Small Soldiers. That was an underrated PlayStation game. That was a really good PlayStation game. And then Tony Hawk's. I'm pretty sure that was like all we had. So I just used to rinse that all the time. And then every time a game came out, because obviously there was so much hype around those games, every time a game came out, we would buy the new one. And then there was one of the games, I think it was Tony Hawk's Underground 1, came out when I was about 11 or 12, and that had a story mode in it where, like, basically you started as an amateur skateboarder and became like a professional skateboarder. And I don't know why the penny hadn't dropped before, but I suddenly realized, I was like, oh man, like, you can be a professional skateboarder. Like, that is actually a thing that you can do. I'd kind of just play it, like, because it's such an arcade game. I don't think I'd ever really considered that, like, Bob Burnquist was a real person or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I think I'd just played the PlayStation game. And then kind of like, yeah, it was almost just like the penny dropped. Like, it probably should have dropped before, but I was like six when the first one came out. And then I was just like, oh my God, this seems like the coolest thing ever. I want to do that. So yeah, like, my whole family have been like athletes. Like, my brother's a professional triathlete. He presents for Global Triathlon Network and stuff. So he's always kind of like, I've grown up with him like swimming and then getting into biathlon and triathlon. And yeah, I was in athletics and rugby and a bit of football, although I'm terrible. As much as I love football, I'm absolutely terrible. So I'd done sports all the way along, but I guess I'd always been in those sports where it was like, you try and be the best, like, blah, blah, blah. And then when I saw you could be a professional skateboarder, I was like, yeah, I want to ride the X Games. Like, bam, like, never stepped on a board before. I'm like, that looks amazing. So yeah, that was kind of where I got into it, but then just kind of found all of the subculture within skating. And I was like, this is the best thing ever. Like, I just, yeah, there's nothing else I want to do. Like, slowly kind of just started dropping the rugby, dropping the athletics, and was just left with skating in the end, man.
I remember that kind of, when I was growing up, and it was all kind of, at school, it was just team sports and stuff. And I'd be like skiving off football and a rugby to try and go skating and stuff. And just bunking out of not wanting to do coaching and just getting out. And like, where would you go? Would you go like in your local town, or would you head into the city, into Bath and stuff?
Yeah. So to be honest, dude, at first I had no idea. We were so lucky, right, that we had, actually for the time, really quite a good park in my town. It was like, it was the old kind of like modular, like metal frame ramps, and they had it was like skate light surface, but I don't think it was legit skate light. It was like some weatherproof thing, but over time all those ramps like sunk into the tarmac and it became kind of terrible. But for me growing up at that kind of moment in my life, it was amazing. It was the only floodlit park as well around for like as far as I can kind of remember. So like, it was a 20-minute skate from my house, and it was floodlit until like 11 o'clock midnight. Not that I was getting to go out that late when I was like 12 anyway. But yeah, I just had that and could just go and rinse it basically every day. So yeah, I kind of like, I guess I was kind of opposite to you in that I did really enjoy the team sports. Like, I did love that side of things, but also like, I hilariously with athletics. So I was doing high jump, and I was like, I got to, I was like fifth in the country for like, was I when I was under 17s for high jump or something. I was like, so I was doing a lot of national competitions, but kind of got to that level. And everyone gets really serious, right? So all of the like local club stuff is wicked. You go to like an athletics meet and, you know, you're sat on like the little strip that the high jump takes place on, and you go around and you chat to everyone and it's really sound. You go to the national competitions and all of a sudden, like the only question you might get asked is, what's your PB? I would get asked that all the time. What's your PB? And it's like, do I lie? Like, I don't even know. And then like you try and have a conversation with people and they're like, they either don't want to talk to you or that is the question they will ask. That was my experience anyway. And then I'm like, I go skating and it's like, someone's got a speaker out, like playing some tunes. We're all hanging out. Like quite often at my local park, we would have like a barbecue out in the summer and stuff, like the disposable barbecues and stuff. And I was like, this is kind of just where I want to be, man. So yeah, a lot of that time was just spent at my local park, and then just did start venturing out to find new places. And yeah, learned to skate vert in Bath on the old, we had an old metal half pipe, which was absolutely wicked. I miss that thing every day. Cause we've now got a great concrete park there, but that metal vert ramp like will never be replaced. So yeah, just kind of started venturing out from there, really. Found it, had a little crew of guys that skate with in Melksham, the town I grew up in. And yeah, just kind of started dipping out from there and finding other places.
And were you kind of looking, like back then, were you sort of seeking out sponsorship at all? Or did that kind of just kind of happen?
Not, I don't remember. I remember wanting to be sponsored and like hooked up, because again, like I'm not gonna lie and say like I cool guyed it. I was like, I got into skating being like, I want to be a professional skateboarder. But yeah, I don't think I like really actively was seeking out. Maybe I was like a little kid going around annoying everyone and I don't really remember it. But I remember my first sponsor was Skate Warehouse. Shout out to those guys. So that was, yeah, the shop down in Devon. And they kind of just like, I don't even know how I ended up chatting to them at NAS Festival, which I've been going to since I was like 13. It's on my doorstep basically. So it's kind of cool to have been a kid going as a punter, like going for the weekend and then kind of getting into like skating the pro comps, now doing a lot of the presenting there and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was there that I kind of spoke to them, and then they were stocking Duff's at the time. Rest in peace. What a brand Duff's was.
Yeah.
And turns out, dude, Duff's were being like, I live in the middle of nowhere. I'm in Wiltshire in a town called Devizes now, just down the road from Melksham where I grew up. Turns out Duff's were being like distributed out of Carn, which is like a tiny town, 10 minutes from here. I don't even know where.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had no idea. And the guy that ended up hooking me up with Duff's went to my secondary school in Corsham, another little town. Like it was really, really surreal. So yeah, those were kind of my first kind of couple of sponsors. And yeah, that went on for a little bit. And then yeah, it kind of just went from there and got a bit more love and ended up getting on some other brands, which was cool. So yeah, I think I always wanted it. I think I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be like the guy that's like, nah, that's not for me. Like I wanted to be good at contests. I wanted to get sponsored. And like, yeah, man, like as a kid, if you asked me, I'd probably quite cringily tell you that I wanted to be like the best in the world or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. But I also definitely like, I wasn't like 100% like serious. Like it was definitely like, right, I really enjoy skating because it's so much fun. Everyone's so sound, like the music and stuff that goes with it. So it's kind of the full 360, man. It was just a really cool thing to be involved in growing up, you know?
Would you say you were like competitive back then? Like with 100%. The events? Or were you just like, yeah, you know, I just want to go and like hang out with mates? And
no, dude, 100%. I still am, if I'm honest. Like I'm still competitive. Probably less so with skate competitions. But to be honest, man, I'm pretty pants at skating contests. Like I always wanted to be really good at it. But like, yeah, man, the pressure gets to me real bad. And we were literally talking about this yesterday. Like it's really interesting with presenting, touch wood, I hope I'm not gonna jinx myself with this, but with presenting, in those like sink or swim like pressure moments, like something goes a bit wrong with a broadcast or whatever, I can usually swim. Like we can get through it and get out the other side, you know. With skating, man, skating, those pressure moments, something goes a little bit wrong, I'm out. Like that's it. Like I, you know, if I fall on a run, I'm very unlikely to be able to pull that run back. Like it's really interesting.
So you wouldn't do what you would do in presenting, no, like when you're doing it live,
no,
right?
Which is so strange because it's the same brain, right? Like, I don't know, like, I just kind of go into autopilot when things have gone wrong previously in broadcast. I don't know what it is, man. Like, just somehow, like, brain goes into autopilot, like I say, and we get through it. But with skating, it's like I fall and then it's really hard to get back on. And like, yeah, just sometimes like basic tricks in competition, I'm like, dude, what? Like, there was a line at NAS. It was literally a few years ago as well. And filmed it first go in warm-ups and then, yeah, drop in and managed to hit a bunch of the tricks and then the nose blunt slide down the rail. Like, bailed that. And I don't think I'd bailed that all weekend. And it was just like, it's just how it goes, man. It's like, just seems to be that's contest for me. But then maybe like now I've got this thing in my head where I'm like, oh, when I skate contests, like, you know, I bail. I don't know. But yeah, so I never really did as well as I could. Like, man, I'm like, simple session. There was one year at simple session. Like, it's always a really hard park to skate. And it's always absolutely mind blowing being a part of that competition. Shout out to the simple session guys. Because you get, like, you know, Aurelien Giroux and stuff, be it like the French guys and the European guys that come out and just absolutely destroy that park, and it's amazing getting to watch that. But there was one year where I was like, this park plays into a lot of my strengths. Like, there's a big gap that I found on like day one where I was like, no one else has hit this yet. It was like a quarter pipe hip transfer over this gap into like this big flat bank. And I was like, I can open my run with that and then link it into the jump box line. And I've been hitting these big backside airs over it. Like, in practice, absolutely fine. Contest run comes. It's like, boom, opening run. Here we go. Like, dropping in, backside air, bail. Like, that's just how my contest seemed to go. And I was like, oh, great. That was my chance. That was my chance to do something at simple session. And I didn't. It did make it into the Red Bull edit. Like, I got one in practice that made it into the Red Bull edit. But yeah, it's just like, that just seems to be like contests just get on top of me, man. It's really strange. As much as I wanted to be a contest guy and smash them, yeah, it just never seemed to happen.
And when you first started like doing all the presenting and broadcasting and live with radio and stuff like that, was there any kind of moment where, I don't know, like as soon as you're live, are you just kind of switched on? And then, you know, if things do happen, which they do, if there are like kind of any tech like malfunctions or, you know, when goes wrong.
Yeah, dude, that like, and that happens. That does happen like quite often. And it's just kind of, it's just part of it really. Like, it's just, I'm always fine. So I'm really lucky in that a lot of the stuff that I do is a lot of fun and you can have a lot of fun with it. I've always wondered like what it's like if you're like a news reader and something's going wrong. Cause you can't just laugh about it. Like, you can't just, like, you might be in the middle of like a really harrowing story and some tech stuff's going wrong and like, you can't just shake that off. And that's where like those guys have a really tough job where like, dude, a skate broadcast, like no one cares. It like, you can even talk about the fact that something's going wrong. And like in most instances, obviously you can't like, you know, talk down the team and stuff. That wouldn't be fair, but like, you know, you can kind of have a laugh with it, but there was like a time, I was doing a live broadcast and this was my first live TV broadcast actually. And, there was a point like basically my in-ear just went. Like, we'd started the broadcast and I'm waiting for the cue for the VT to come up on screen. And I'm like waiting. And I'm chatting to the guy next to me. And like, we'd usually had time for like two questions to open the show. And I'm like, right, I'll hit him with a third. And then he answers that. And I'm like, right, well, let's go to the contest format and let's see if it comes up on screen. And it came up on screen and I very quickly realized, I was like, I think my in-ear's gone. Like, cause I can't hear anything, and had to just remember the running order. Luckily we'd done a bunch of practice. But had to just kind of remember the running order, go through it, cue everything. They were just following my cues. And then in the next, cause there was a bunch of, it was a contest format, park overview and stuff. And then there was a pre-recorded VT where I knew the mics would be cut and just had to say to the camera guy, like, can you tell the production team, like, I can't hear anything. And they had to just like, yeah, sort it out real quick. And that's the kind of stuff where you just like, you're live on TV, man. And you've just got to be like, what do we do? Like, we just got to crack on. Like, it's pretty mad. And just other times, like we had one at Simple Session, the team there are wicked to work with, like really, really cool. It's always a fun broadcast, but like one where they were like, I think they were lining up Lizard King for an interview, and they, I think they thought they had him and then they didn't, and then maybe thought they had him again, and then actually, no, we don't have the interview. And I'm getting this in my ear and like, start queuing the interview. And then it's like, no, we don't have the interview. And it's like, right, okay, so I've got to drop that interview and now potentially fill for time with Mark Brewster, who I was doing the broadcast with next to me. And like, and then, oh no, we've got the interview again. Oh no, we don't have the interview. Like, it just, it was kind of just going just back and forth,
right?
Yeah. And then because they'd done that a couple of, they were just like, yeah, just can the interview. Like, don't worry about it. But there's stuff like that that's going on in your ear quite a lot. Like quite a lot of the time, man, like 90% of the time, you're absolutely chilling. But sometimes there are just little things that like, the team behind you are like, you know, they are dealing with spinning so many plates at any one time. And sometimes they just need you. Can you just fill for a moment whilst we just get on top of this thing? I've never been in those OB trucks. I can only imagine it's mad, because the amount that they've got to be on top of is insane. Like, hats off to anyone that does those broadcasts, like that works in production for those, because it blows my mind, dude. It really blows my mind. Like, we have one thing to focus on, like talking to camera or whatever, or commentary, whilst they've got like X number of cameras running, like lining up interviews, making sure they've got all the VTs in place and hoping the tech is all working. It's insane, man. It's absolutely insane.
I had a shocker like last year with, was doing a live event for Stacey Brolter's new movie. And that was kind of like just before the movie came out, like I had to do like intro on stage, and there's like, I don't know, a good couple of, maybe like 500 people, 600 people waiting.
Yeah.
And I get on, I was like, ask the mic people like 20 minutes before, like, everything good, everything working. And they're like, yeah, don't worry. Get on stage, get handed the microphone, and it's off.
Oh, then, no.
I mean, I'm sort of just like looking at them. It's like, everyone's like, what's going on? And Stacey's like, he's like waiting for like the introduction to come on, and I'm supposed to like do my spiel and stuff.
Yeah. As if you aren't feeling the pressure enough anyway, like you've got to introduce an absolute legend, like
in Portugal, doing it in English. So everyone's like,
amazing.
Everything going against me. I hand me another mic and it just starts echoing like around the thing.
No.
I can't believe this is happening. So you just want like a little hole to like open up in the ground so you can jump in. And just like, I was dying, and there's like so you're just like waiting there, like tapping the mic, and then eventually, like, this was like sort of 10 minutes, and people, they're like booing, and, like,
oh no, and people are starting booing.
Eventually starts, and then I get another mic, get a third one, and it starts working.
Yes.
And I was like wait, we're back, and then everyone's just like starts clapping and like laughing and stuff.
Perfect.
And then eventually kind of like turned it around and then introduced him, and he came down. I was like, mate, I'm so sorry. He's like, it's not your fault.
Yeah, you can just laugh that stuff off, man. Like, that's, yeah, it's just tech issues, isn't it? You just got to kind of laugh about that stuff and crack on. Like, but yeah, was it really good, man? He seems like the coolest guy.
He was like, he's so like chill, kind of super like articulate. Like, I spoke to him, like, we did like an interview the day after, and like had him on the pod and stuff. And just a really nice guy, and stories for, you know, for days, right? Just kind of figures out exactly what angle you want to talk about, and then we'll just jump on that.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I feel though like you could hang out with the guy every day for a decade and you'd still be getting new stories from him. Like, you just, man, the guy has lived. Like, it's unreal. Like, the stuff that he's seen and been a part of, it's absolutely amazing, man. Like, what a guy. Cool that you get to hang out with him. I saw you did an episode with him as well on here. Like, wicked.
Yeah, super fun. And like, kind of going into that, like, how did you get your start in radio? When did that kind of come about?
So, man, so that was kind of interesting. Like, so radio came after after Stuff to Camera, basically. So, like, so essentially, I was skating for Animal, and I'm pretty sure this is kind of where it started. In fact, actually, let's rewind a little further because it'll make a bit more sense. Basically, I set up a contest series. So again, stepping into that competition, like wanting to be competitive. There were no local contests, basically, to me.
Okay.
And so as someone that wanted to get into skating comps, All that I could find were like UK champs, like blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of realistic. I was like, I'm 12, 13. I'm not good enough to be turning up to these competitions. wanted some local contests and there were none, and ended up randomly speaking to like a youth worker who used to come down to the skate park. And he was like, oh, why don't you set up your own contest series? And I was like, I could do that. Like, that sounds cool. So he worked with me, and we worked with Wiltshire Council to basically get the Wiltshire Skate Series going. And Wiltshire Council were sick. Like, they were like 100% on board. We will handle all of the admin. Like, we'll make sure everything's above board. But we don't know anything about skating. We're not going to pretend to. So essentially, you need to run this thing. So that involved me jumping on the mic. So from like the age of 14, 15, I was kind of on a mic emceeing skate competitions and like running the event, organizing the event, sorting sponsors, and just kind of had to do it because otherwise it wasn't going to happen. And then through that, ended up skating for Animal, and kind of through working in that kind of world, when Animal wanted to come to, it was actually NAS Festival. I'm pretty sure this is where it started. They were basically looking for a piece to camera. And because I'd been on the mic for events, they were like, well, we'll get James to do it. Cause they wanted to do like a bit of a summary. They had like, James Jones, like incredible BMXer on the team at the time as well. So a bunch of us skating the comps there, and they were like, yeah, can we get like an intro for our highlights video? So I did that. And I think it was off the back of that then NAS Festival was saying about me doing like a park preview. So did that, and then ended up doing, I got in with some like adverts for like Coca-Cola and Sky, and then randomly started talking to the Extreme Sports Channel. Shouts to Tim McMullen, who kind of really gave me a shot. I pitched a show to him, which, yeah, was probably terrible. I can't even remember what the first idea was. And then he fully worked with me to shape it. And then I kind of figured out a rough budget for how it was going to be. And he was like, right, add this much on for contingency. We don't have a production company. Go and make it. And we made a 6-part TV show for the Extreme Sports Channel. And now, like, dude, working in TV, people like Tim, like, you know, there's obviously there's an element of being busy, but the fact that Tim just went, yeah, James is hungry. Like, he wants to do this. We're keen to take a punt on him. Like, that opportunity, I just thought that was how TV works. I was like, oh yeah, Tim's a cool guy. Like, oh, this TV industry is going to be a doddle. Like, you know, if everyone's like Tim, this is going to be sweet. But I was just really fortunate. Like, I can't shout him out enough that he was actually just like, yeah, do you know what? Your first idea is, let's be honest, shit. Like, let's work on it. And yeah, let's build it up from here and make it into something that is something we want to air. And they were so stoked when the show came out as well, when it came together. Like, Tim was absolutely buzzing. But he took a real risk, man, because it could have been
like, how old were you?
How old was I, man? Like,
you're still in your teens or?
Nah, early 20s. This was 2016. Okay. It came out. Maybe we're filming it 2015. So how many years ago is that? It's that 8 years. I was probably like 21. Maybe I was 21 filming this. And like no formal experience, man. Like, Tim had just gone, yeah, I like James. Like, obviously it was his call. And he was like, prepared to take a punt. But if we'd gone and made an absolutely terrible 6-part series, like, he'd have had to have died on that hill with us, because he'd be going to his management and going, yeah, we gave them, we got a budget signed off. And what they've produced is absolutely terrible. Here you go. But no, they were absolutely stoked in the end on what we made. So yeah, it really, really worked out. But to answer your question, that had all kind of happened. And then I was like, I had always loved radio. I've always loved music. I'll talk about like the music side of skating. I'd always loved music of like so many different genres. And so I'd kind of always wanted to be in radio. I'd really enjoyed listening to radio as well. Weirdly, one of my producers now is actually the like presenter that used to be, there was a station here called GWR, which I think it kind of became part of Heart in the end. But yeah, she was on the breakfast show, and I used to listen to her every morning on the way into school. And like, I didn't realize, I was obviously like, I was probably taking that in more than most kids. Like, I just really enjoyed what radio was and how exciting it could be and spinning tunes and like having a laugh on air. And so I'd always kind of wanted to step into that, I think. And like, when all the presenting was kind of coming up, I was skating for Mini Rigs at this point, the portable speaker brand. And they kind of backed me doing a radio show on Pyro Radio in Shoreditch. Mm-hmm. And mate, I would like not want to hear my first show ever again. But they were back in it. They were paying me to go into London, produce the show. We were having guest mixes and stuff. So it was all kind of drum and bass and house music. And then Soho Radio, I ended up switching over to Soho, having a show there that I produced from home in the end. So I'd got decks at that point. I was DJing and stuff and ended up doing a show there. And then I was getting mentored by someone who was working at Capital at the time, a guy called Rob, who, again, absolute legend, like just took me under his wing. Very much the same thing, listened to my first radio demo and pretty much was just like, this is absolutely terrible. Let's work on this. Which, again, most people would go, this is absolutely terrible. I'm not working with this guy. But he was like, 100%, let's meet up for coffee. I'll give you feedback, take it or leave it, see what you do. And then started building up my demos and like was just taking everything he said on board. Built up my demos from there. And then in the end, he was like, I want to put you in touch with a guy called Chris North. And he's an agent for a lot of people in radio. And I signed up with Chris and basically, yeah, met up with Chris. Like, and basically it was like, Rob's vouch for you. Like, let's do it, which was in hindsight, nice. Absolutely insane. Ended up going for a meeting with Radio One. Again, in hindsight, absolutely insane. Like I'd done basically nothing at that point. And they were like, yeah, cool. We like your demo, which very fortunate that like Rob had worked with me on it. Cause he was like, okay, this is now ready to kind of show to the world, to like put the other stuff in the bin and never let it see the light of day. And then, yeah, took that to Radio One. They gave me a load of feedback and they were like, yeah, this is cool. But they were like, you just need your live air miles up. So call them air miles in kind of radio, like, literally being live on air, working to time. And so, yeah, he suggested I get in touch with kind of local radio. Sorry, this is a really long story.
No, that's good, man.
But he suggested getting in touch with local radio, and kind of just seeing if I could go and hang out, shadow or anything. Unfortunately, because skating, there had been murmurs about skating being in the Olympics and there had been skate parks being built. BBC Radio Wiltshire had actually had me on a bunch to kind of interview and talk about skating. And so I hit up Marie, who looks after a lot of the sport there. She had me in for a day of shadowing. And basically I left with an email address, sent an email to the editor, Mary, who again is someone that just massively backed me, got to send so much love to her. She just gave me a cover shift straight off the bat. Like, boom. Yeah. Do you want to come in and cover Saturday 12 till 2 at one point? Like, what do you think? Like, okay, cool. And it just kind of built up from there. And I think, so I did my first cover show in March. I did a bunch more cover shows. Then I got offered to take on Friday nights in the August of that year. I think that was 2019. And then COVID hit. They wanted to make things more local again on Saturday and Sunday nights because they're more of a regional show typically. So they cover a bunch of different stations with the same show. They wanted to make everything localized because of COVID. It was all about having kind of a local voice. So I took on Saturday and Sunday nights as well. And then when all of that came to an end, they hit me up and they were like, we'd like you to take on BBC Introducing for the West of England. So it kind of built up that way. So then I was doing a regional show there. And then, yeah, not too long after, ended up doing Radio 1, covering Charlie Hedges for Dance Anthems. So that was kind of the very long journey. Sorry, that was... I never know when to start in that story because otherwise it doesn't really make sense. The next thing if I start...
And then were you doing your own production company as well? Was that sort of... You were kind of doing projects at the same time?
Yeah. So I work with a guy called Pete Pickford, who's been like a friend of mine for years. And actually I met through Skate Warehouse. So he was living down there, used to be a part of a skate park down there. They had like an indoor park. I can't remember what, was it called the Unit? I'm sure it's called the Unit, but Pete was working there basically. I think I met the Skate Warehouse guys through that because they were really local and the team would go and skate the park and stuff. Got on really well with Pete. It was really interesting because could fully tell we went on a team trip to Barcelona. And like, we're out filming skating. And then Pete's like, right, I'm going to yip off and just go to some of the touristy spots and get some B-roll. And you could tell Pete was like really into like, yeah, just really focusing in on like the hyperlapses and getting really nice cutaways basically. And I was like, when the Extreme Sports Channel came along, I was like, I know Pete will nail this because it's skating, but also we want it to look beautiful as well. And Pete is 100% all about that. So he was like literally the kind of, the golden person for me to have met basically and team up with. So we set up a production company together called The Directive, which still runs. We still do quite a bit for the National Trust, who are like a wicked, wicked client. But basically, because I've got a lot going on, Pete's got a lot going on as well. He's actually also a structural engineer. So he does a lot with Cardiff Uni and stuff. We work with the National Trust mainly and kind of just factor in jobs around kind of other bits that we're doing. So it's not like it's a full-time intense production company, but that works for both of us really well, really. So we've done stuff. We did like 360 event coverage of Street League for G-Shock as well when that was in London. So we've done quite a bit over the years, but it's a really nice kind of like thing that we do together on the side, and neither of us are like, this needs to be like way bigger. We're like really kind of happy with where it's at and kind of what we're each doing. So
and did stuff with Pritchard as well, right? Was that when you
so really like probably good I mentioned actually doing the Extreme Sports Channel stuff, because it was through that I met Pritch, and who I now actually like consider a really good friend. He's like, genuinely, what you see is 100% what you get with Pritch. Like, that energy is, he doesn't switch it on for the camera. He is one of the loveliest guys you'll ever meet, which is like, I think there's kind of this, he's also one of the, if not the gnarliest guys I know, right? There's always this thing of like, you're gnarly, you're probably not a very nice person. Like, Pritch is gnarly and like genuinely one of the nicest people you will ever meet, and will give everyone the time of day. And yeah, it's basically through that. The whole premise of the show for the Extreme Sports Channel was people that have taken skateboarding and done something different with it. So like, we had Hugh Hardy, who again has become a really good friend. He is a drum and bass producer, really, really successful, but actually an insanely good skateboarder as well. Has come up with a lot of the guys in Cambridge, like skated with Charlie Munro and stuff. So has come up with a lot of kind of really good names, and like has an absolute stomper of a Nolly Heel downstairs sets, but is a really great drum and bass producer and DJ. And we kind of spoke to him about all of that, like, you know, how he will, when he's got writer's block, he'll go out for a skate, and 9 times out of 10 it always helps just to clear the brain and come back completely fresh. We went out to Bryggeriet, the college in Sweden, where you can it's basically a skateboarding school. You go to college, you study all your normal subjects, but they use skateboarding as the thing to hook them in. So they've got the indoor skate park there, which is actually where Vertitac happens every year. And they have the students really involved in designing the park, designing products, like, you know, and they were saying they have to do obviously your boring kind of like English, math, science and stuff. But they're like, everywhere else they can, they will get skateboarding into the subject they're teaching. And they have one of the highest attendance rates in education in Sweden. So that's, we were doing crazy stuff like that. Mate, it's absolutely amazing. If you ever get the chance to go, it's in Malmo. They're doing amazing stuff. You should 100% get them on here, because they are.
Is that just due to the, like, was that before the Olympics kind of conversation started happening, or
no, Matt, like, this has been around. It's been around like quite a while. It was essentially, that's where they were saying something about, like, it was like the government kind of came out and basically said you could apply for a license to essentially be a school. It was something along those lines. And that's not saying anyone could set up a school. I think they had to go through pretty stringent things to kind of get there. But essentially they were able to go in, and it was like, look, if you meet this criteria, yeah, you can be a school that specializes in skateboarding. And they said they've seen students come in that are barely attending school that now have like 85, 90% attendance records for the year. Because they know they can come in and skate, and they have an amazing skate park. They can skate every day. So it was so good. We kind of peeled back the curtain on that and found out more about what they do. And yeah, it was so interesting to see. And then obviously Pritch was another episode. We looked at, you know, how he'd started out as one of the country's best street skateboarders, coming out of Wales, coming out of Cardiff, and then had gone into Dirty Sanchez and everything that followed with MTV, and then on to being like an ultra athlete, doing everything that he's doing now and breaking world records and becoming vegan. And we just hit it off, like, because there was so much that we could discuss, like there was so much in common. As soon as we met each other, there was the skateboarding, but then also there was the TV side of things. And yeah, there was just, we just got on like a house on fire from the get-go. And he mentioned, I really like want to do some cooking stuff, and I was like, what are you on about? You want to do some cooking stuff? And he was like, oh yeah, before skateboarding, man, like I trained as a chef. And yeah. I was like, what are you on? Like thinking he was like having us on, or maybe he was over egging it or whatever. Nah, turns out he is a legitimately amazing chef. Like he's yeah. really, really great. And he was like, yeah, I want to, he was basically saying there's so many people that are doing great stuff with vegan cooking, but it's so complex. And he's like, when I cook for myself at home, I'm making like a banging chickpea curry and it takes me 15 minutes. And he's like, I want to share that with people. I want it to be like no frills. It's not Michelin star. It's going to be very rough around the edges, as everything with Pritchard is, but you're going to end up with some banging food at the end of it. And that was, so we kind of had this idea to set up Pritchard's proper vegan cooking. So we did that. And then off the back of that, he ended up doing, yeah, his TV series and everything. And yeah, exactly that. And yeah, it's kind of gone from there. We continue to do so. Every chance that I have to basically do something with Pritchard, I will take, because it is always so much fun. We did for Oomph, the vegan, I don't know how they really describe themselves, but basically make these really good like vegan, I don't want to call them like substitutes, but it's like, it's the meat kind of texture, like replacement kind of things, but they're really great. And they do a whole sort, they do like this kebab meat and stuff like that. It's really great, but they wanted to do a veganuary campaign, wanted to do it with Pritch, and wanted him to adopt a meat eater. And Pritch hit me up and was like, do you want to do it? And I was like, this sounds hilarious. So we did veganuary together. Yeah, he's just a really fun guy to work with, man. He's really, really cool.
And now kind of, I guess, like combining all those things and then football as well, kind of going into that. How's that been? Have you always kind of been into football, would you say, like before?
Not really, man. Actually, hilariously, not really. Before I started doing stuff with 433, yeah. But I'd say I'm definitely like a newer football fan in the grand scheme of things. When there's people that are like, I'm about to turn 30 and I've got friends that have like followed football for the last three decades. They've been like born into it. Like my family were never really into football. But I just kind of found myself slipping into it as a bit of a neutral. Like I would go to the pub, play a bit of pool. And if a game was on, I'd find myself getting quite hooked. And I was like, this is really cool. Like I really enjoy this. And then, oh man, was it like 2015, maybe 2015-ish? I started finding myself like Spurs had a really good squad at the time, like a really cool, like some really exciting English talent coming through. Obviously Harry Kane, Dele Alli and stuff, you know, and we had like, there was Jan Vertonghen and Toby Alderweireld in defense. And it just felt like, yeah, I found myself rooting for Tottenham a lot, and then kind of just fell into it. And I was like, I'm a fan. Like, this is it. I'm hooked. And yeah, just kind of out of nowhere, just ended up stepping into doing football stuff, which was never on the agenda. That was never part of the plan that I'd end up doing stuff with football. Yeah. But mate, working with 433, it's amazing. Like they're the biggest football community in the world, over 62 million followers on Instagram and rapidly rising. When I joined 2 years ago, it was 37 million. It's now 62 million. That the growth.
You did some big interviews, man. I mean, I saw that one with Wrighty and.
Mate, that was, hilarious. And again, like, man, in terms of people you can interview, like, he was a legend. And it's sinful for me to say that as a Spurs fan, that Wrighty, Arsenal legend, who caused Spurs pain for many years, is a legend. But he was a really great dude. Like, and just like chatting to the crew and like, one of the guys, Pascal, he has quite a few tattoos, and Wrighty liked a particular tattoo, and he's like, oh, what's that, man? Like, what is the story behind that? And it's like, he doesn't have to do that. Like, he's just, you know, we're setting up and he can just sit there in silence on his phone, do whatever he wants. But he was just getting so involved. And then he'd seen that we're all wearing the same shoes, because basically there's a sister company of 433 called Baller, which is a fashion brand. And they were kind of like supporting what we were doing out there. And we were all rocking the same pair of shoes. And he was like, well, are they like, they're really cool. And I was like, man, we could probably get you a pair if you want. And he was like, would you? We're like, yeah, of course, man. So like, yeah. He was just, man, he was a really cool guy. And to be honest, everyone that I've had the chance to meet was really cool. But it just, dude, that just came about from like a chance thing of like a friend who is an Arsenal fan. He hit me up and was like, 433 have posted that they're looking for hosts. And I was like, yeah, dude, like, I don't think I'm going to know enough. Like, it's going to be, you know, if they want someone that can talk through a game, can get real into transfers and stuff like that, I'm probably not their guy. Like, you know, yeah. And then started looking into it because he sent me the link. And it was basically like, we're all about the fans. We're all about like the entertainment. We want to capture the fun side of football. And I was like, oh my God, like maybe this is me. And I just applied, dude. And like, it was weird. It was like, it was this competition process and just went through a bunch of the steps and then kind of got to the final thing. I think there was three of us left in and it was like, had to do an interview for it. And I prepped so much. I was like at my dining table, I've got stuff on my table. And yeah, spoke to Lucas, like who was essentially, he was going to be doing the interview. I was well ready for it. And he basically just comes on. He was like, oh, really like everything you've done. Cause we'd had to do like a takeover and stuff to like prove ourselves partway through the process. He's like, really like everything you've done. Do you want to get your calendar out? When are you free for the Euros? And I was like, what, man? Like I've prepped all of these things.
And are you gonna ask me more questions? You know, come on.
Yeah. Could you just ask me a few just to make this not a waste of time with all the notes? But yeah, absolutely buzzing, man. And just got stuck straight in on the Euros. Like, what a first gig, man. Was just down at Wembley, basically, for every England game. It was nuts. And just getting to cover that, getting to be at the Euro final when England were playing, obviously. Very sad result from that for us as England fans. But yeah, absolutely wicked. And just, stoked to be getting to do stuff with them. We get to go to some amazing, amazing places and, you know, like going out to the Champions League for the next few weeks, basically. Like we've got a bunch of dates in the calendar and getting to work with some really cool brands and partnerships and stuff. So yeah, it's sick, man. It's honestly really cool. It's really, really cool.
And how does it feel kind of, with that sort of size of events, does it feel different? Or would you say that, or, you know, if you're kind of doing, say, like a NASA or Ball Masters or maybe some smaller skate events or things like that, and then kind of going into being in Wembley?
Honestly,
they're kind of sold out Wembley Stadium and you're like,
yeah, I really enjoy the mix, to be honest, man. Like I really enjoy that. 1 minute, like literally this week just gone. It was like, oh, I'm at snowbombing, presenting stuff. Right, fly back next day. It's bam into the skateboard GB national championships, and then it's like, right, a few days to prep BBC introducing for this weekend, and then we're gonna sneak off before we do that and go and cover Champions League. I'm like, it's amazing, man. Like it's wicked. We're getting to mix all different things in. Like, I never actually see as well though the numbers that are viewing the stuff that we're doing with 433, because it's on their Instagram stories that we do a lot of the takeovers, which I think helps because we're like, is well over a million on like on the stories that are viewing. So not being able to see those faces definitely helps when you record a video and you're like, yeah, just post it, man. That's all good. That's fine. Like, you know, it's less daunting for sure. But like, man, the thing I do find a bit weird and a bit like kind of hard to figure out, I'm still trying to figure it out at the moment, is like how I make all of this make sense, in the sense of like posting on Instagram and stuff. Like 1 minute we film in a line at the barracks and the next it's like an interview with Michael Owen. And it's like, do people like the guys enjoying the stage? Like,
what's going on with James?
Yeah. Like also, oh, and now he's snowboarding. Like what's going on? Oh, Champions League. Oh, an F1 arcade. Like, you know, I do worry about that a little bit with like Instagram, but I'm kind of hoping that people are just like, oh, it's cool. You do a lot. Like, I don't know. It just feels like a real mixture from 1 minute to the next, but I enjoy living that. I enjoy doing that. Yeah. So I'm like, I'll post it and hopefully people enjoy it as well. I don't know.
Are you pretty active, would you say? Or are you kind of like, especially because if you almost leave it a day or 2 days and then it's gone, right? If you're kind of bouncing around, like if you're going to events and it's sort of.
Yeah, for sure. To be honest, I will just post stuff in retrospect as well, because I kind of like, I don't know, I don't expect people to like necessarily follow my calendar to a T as well. So I'm like, I'm gonna post some stuff from like the event that happened like two things ago. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. Yeah. So I will just post kind of ad hoc, but like maybe that's a bad thing. I don't really know. I'm not a social media like genius. But yeah, I don't know. There's all this stuff as well around how Instagram has said they're going to favor you if you post on your grid every single day. I'm like, dude, like posting, like it's about to become a full-time job if that's what we've got to be doing. But no, yeah, I kind of just post it and like hope people like it, basically.
No, that's not bad. And dude, I've got to ask you about the podcast as well, with the like, with the listeners probably can't see, but behind you, like the Ultimate Party podcast. Yeah. And like that's kind of basically grabbing celebs and getting them to like sort of say like what's their best, well, I don't know, if they had like a kind of fantasy party. Is that kind of the gist of it, right?
Like essentially it's like what would the party of your wildest dreams be if you had an unlimited budget to make it happen? So we're recording season two at the moment. We've just had Everything on, who are a band I absolutely love. So really, really stoked to have them in the mix. But man, the people that we've had on, like Sean Walsh, Jody Harsh, like, man, we've had some really, really cool people on. The Wombats as well. They did like a street food party in Liverpool. Like, yeah, it's amazing. Like, honestly, some of them, man, I'm like, I really want to make these parties happen in real life now. Like you go through it and you're like, it's a real shame. We've planned this party down to a T and it's not going to happen. Like I kind of actually, I'd love at some point in life to be able to go, actually, that party was sick. Let's just go and do it. Like it's feasible.
That would be a good business. Like you could kind of, just do a different theme. Like, you know?
Yeah, mate, it would be amazing, wouldn't it? It would be amazing. Some of them are pretty realistic. Some of them not so, but some of them are fairly like, actually, you haven't blown the budget on this one. We could maybe actually make it happen. Because like with the Wombats, it was at Dan's brother owns a street food market in Liverpool and he wanted it to be there. And it's like, cool, we probably don't have a venue hire fee, Dan. Like we can probably do this. It's a lot of fun. I never know what I'm going to get. And I always kind of purposely, like we get six tracks from the guests as well, which are going to be in their party playlist. I always get them from them in advance, but I never know what the party is going to be. So we go live and I'm asking the questions and genuinely finding out for the first time what this party is going to be, which sometimes feels a little bit loose because you never quite know what anyone's going to say. But genuinely, I love it. I find out at the same time as the listeners, you know. It's great. It was a little idea we had a while ago and we were like, is this going to work? And yeah, fully stoked on how it's kind of come out.
That's the best though, right? Because if you prep it too much, I kind of get, I don't know, a few times where people sort of like, oh, can you send me some questions? And wanna like, it's like, yeah. Oh, well, we can do. I can send you kind of like some topics, but
yeah.
You know, we don't want to kind of keep it like too rigid and you can just go off on tangents and, you know.
For sure. Exactly that, man. Like at the BBC get that a lot too. Like people wanting to know questions and I get it. Cause I get that it's nerve wracking. Like, you know, you're coming into something like, and you know, you might not do a lot of interviews and stuff like that, but genuinely like you get the best stuff when you don't know what's coming. And like, you are just answering legitimately, as long as you're not like being caught out. Like, you know, you see the politicians and stuff that are getting thrown curveballs. Like most interviews, you're just chatting to someone that like you want to find out more about them, right? And it's like, yeah, just want genuine answers. And yeah, we've had it before as well, like with the National Trust, where people have wanted to script their answers and we will record their answers scripted first. And then we're like, right, now we're going to do another and we're just going to put the script. We've done the scripted one, like we've got that in the bank, so it's all good. We'll just see how this goes. And they always smash it the second time around when they're just talking from the heart about things. And like, you always get the points. They always get the points that they wanted to get in there. But when it comes across more naturally, it's like, yeah, it's always the better way. So yeah, I kind of just flip that on its head with, you know, like essentially the guest is kind of leading it as much as I'm asking the questions. The guest is leading it with what the party's going to be. So yeah, I find out for the first time as we're asking the questions as well. So yeah, sometimes get totally thrown off. But it's amazing. I love it. Love it.
Mate, you definitely got to make them real. Bring the money to.
Yeah, man. We should do it. We'll find one at some point that we can actually make happen. I think Dan from the Wombats, I'm pretty keen to do that, to actually bring that to life. But yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to do one at some point.
Nice one. And now, so you're going to be heading over to Portugal soon. And what else is coming up in the summer?
Oh, man. Oh God, what's coming up in the summer? We've got, I think, Glastonbury. I think we're going to be broadcasting live from Glastonbury, hopefully doing lots of social bits. We got NAS, we got Boardmasters. Look through the calendar. Oh my word. Lots of Champions League as well. Cause we've got obviously the kind of final stages we're coming into now. If anyone wants to keep tabs, basically at James Threlfall on pretty much everything other than Twitter. I think that was taken. I think that's at Threlfall James. We got like Simple Session as well. Stuff will be dropping in all the time, man. So that's the place to keep tabs if anyone does want to. It's going to be a busy one. Busy one.
And then Sickle Session has moved. It's a summer event now, hasn't it? Or it's like sort of
which is really
like historically like this epic winter skate
exactly
event in Estonia in the snow and
Yeah, because I think they dabbled with Simple Summer Session a bit, and they were doing that in Riga in Latvia, and I don't know if that was what kind of made them go, actually, summer's pretty cool, man. Like doing a summer event is really cool, because like basically they were able, they've kind of moved it. I think they've said, don't hold me to this, I might be saying things all wrong, but I think for their 25th anniversary they want to go back to the big arena that they were in, but they're now in this like this factory. It's like this old factory kind of thing that's become like a bit of an edgy area of Tallinn. Like there's some really nice apartments and stuff around there. But yeah, they've got basically this mad, like where it's like real industrial looking old school warehouse. And like, yeah, it's just a really sick setting for a contest. So they've kind of moved things over there. And I think they're kind of like, well, if it's summer, we can whack a mini ramp outside. We can get a bar out. Like there's, I think isn't one of the guys that works for Simple Session, like it's his brother has like this amazing burger business, which is like really famous in Tallinn. They've got a spot just outside the park. So I think it kind of all came to that where they were like, actually, if we do this in summer, we can kind of do a lot around the event as well outside and get a lot of that going too. So yeah, I don't know if they ever have plans to move it back to winter. Like it was quite cool going over to a contest and you're like walking through the snow to get into the arena to skate. It felt so weird. Like I don't think any other contest really ever does that. But yeah, it's summer at the moment, and Tallinn in summer is amazing. Have you ever been to Estonia? Because it's beautiful.
I've been to Tallinn, but I'm like not for Simple Session. I went I was in Finland, and then we kind of got the ferry over.
Yes,
and,
yeah, it's only a couple of hours.
Like all the Finns kind of go on like a booze cruise, like to it's so expensive, like in Finland. So they're like, oh, we'll go over to.
That's
to
so Tallinn funny. I didn't even think about that, man. Yeah, I didn't even think about that being a possibility. Yeah, because it is well expensive in Finland if you want to drink. But yeah, they come over all the time. I think Pat Duffy is living in Finland, or was living in Finland at least. So he ends up, he's kind of involved in judging at Simple Session. So yeah, he will get the ferry over from Finland. Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's a cool part of the world that like I probably wouldn't have been to without skating, you know, and love going out there every year. And the Simple Session crew, like so much love for those guys, like just kind of as a skater out there and then kind of transitioning to presenting. Actually, one of our now boarding episodes was on Simple Session. So that was how I got to know the crew so much. And yeah, they kind of ended up just getting me involved in the broadcast and now kind of presenting out there and stuff. Yeah, it's really cool, man. Like it's a wicked event. For anyone listening, highly recommend getting out there if you ever get the chance. The parties are great as well. So if you're that way inclined, you will have a brilliant time.
Nice one. Well, James, thanks so much, man. It's been wicked chatting. Looking forward to seeing everything that's coming up as well.
Likewise. Yeah, definitely. Likewise, man. Very excited to see who's next. And thank you so much for having me on the show, man. Like I say, I've watched a bunch of the episodes in the past. So yeah, real honor to get to come on, man. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. As always, you can find show notes and links to resources on radseason.com. I'll be releasing a weekly episode every Monday, so don't forget to subscribe to the Rad Season podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to be notified when new episodes drop. If you want to reach out to me, feel free to get in contact on Ollie Russell Cowan via all the usual social media channels. Thanks for listening.